Welcome back to the Shift with Beth podcast. I'm your host, Beth Schild, and today is a very exciting day because I'm bringing on my first podcast guest, and it's my partner, Mr. Randy Brimhall. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
How are you feeling right now?
Honestly, very nervous.
Yeah,
this is not my wheelhouse for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. But I'm excited.
Thank you for being here. We've been talking about podcasts, doing podcasts to episodes together for months now.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's been fun to, we're finally here. And this is our first time recording a video.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of, it's like, I think you listen to podcasts and you think, oh, like they know what they're doing or it seems so natural. And it's like, we actually have no idea.
Oh, I have no idea. But here we are, and we have been talking about it for a long time and bouncing ideas off of it, and it's been fun.
Yeah. So a lot of people want to hear the story of how we met, which we're going to get into. So this is going to be a couple part series. We're not sure how many episodes we'll break this into. Depends on how long we talk, and we can talk for a long time.
A long time.
So, but I thought it was important that we share the stories about who we were before we met. So kind of our origin stories. And so we're going to start there just to give the listener an idea of kind of what led us to each other, but from the beginning. So I'm just going to ask you to share kind of about where you're from, what your childhood might have been like. And then we'll just go from there.
That sounds good. And I think that's perfect because I do think it's really important to talk about our origins, because that's where a lot of our patterns that we operate from originate. And going through my whole life and looking back and realizing those things has been very powerful for me. So I am from a small town in Arizona called Snowflake.
Small town boy,
born and raised, maybe about 5,000 people. I was raised in a very rigorous and religious upbringing that was tough because they kind of projected onto you what they expected you to be and how they wanted you to show up. And I got really good at doing that.
So how many siblings?
So I have 4 siblings, 1 older brother and 2 younger brothers and a kind of sister.
So you're number 2.
So I'm number 2 of 5. Mm-hmm. Grew up with my parents. They stayed married. And it was a very loving household. You know, my dad, he taught us to work really hard. My mom was always there for us, taking care of everything. Very loving, loving mother, for sure.
She's the sweetest.
She is. But with that being said, I mean, and I do say this with a lot of love, I mean, my dad, although he taught us how to work hard, he was very demanding and very hard on us. And it was very similar to some of the church stuff where, you know, he demanded perfection. If we messed up, we were punished. And same thing with my mom, as loving as she was, if we also messed up, she always said, I'm not mad, but I am disappointed. Mm. You know, a lot of times that was even harder to hear than, you know, getting punished by my dad.
Yeah. And what was your religion?
I grew up LDS, grew up in the church, baptized. I went and I even served a mission, did all the things that I should have done. And it was one of those things where internally, like, I was just operating from what I should be doing. Inside, I knew, like, I had questions, but I never dared voice those questions or concerns about the religion, about going on a mission. The biggest part was just, I wanted to show up and make my parents proud of me.
Right. So did you feel like you wanted to go on a mission?
At that time, no, I definitely did not want to go, but I was afraid of disappointing my mom.
Yeah, and why didn't you want to go, like, personally?
I just never felt connected in the church. I never felt like myself. You know, I could tell I was being somebody, I was showing up as somebody that I had to be and not really showing up as myself.
Do you feel like you were conscious of that at the time?
No, but I could feel it internally. And when I look back and reflect on it, I know that's what it was. But at the time I felt the resistance, but I felt the fear that if I didn't go, then I'm not going to be enough. I'm going to disappoint my mom. I'm going to lose the love for my parents.
Right.
I'm not going to be accepted. So it was a hard thing to do at that time, you know, but I did it. And just like everything else, like growing up with these survival patterns that I developed, I became a very high achiever. I got all the good grades in school. I excelled in sports. Everything I did, like I did it to the max. I tried to be perfect at it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it was just one of those things. It was just, I wanted to make my parents proud. Well, I was always looking for their approval.
Right. Okay. And so then you went on the mission. And how was that experience?
That was a tough experience.
Where did you go?
I went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I mean, of course I know these things, but I'm like, if people listening, I know. Don't know.
Yeah. So I went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, served the full 2 years. Wanted to come home several times.
And tell me about that. So, like when you say serve the full 2 years, feels like there's something there.
Yeah, that word served, and like it almost feels like a sentence.
Right. But it's also like feels like you want to say that you did it, that you did the whole thing.
Yeah, I accomplished it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I stuck it out, and just like I did it with everything, I did it to the best of my abilities. You know, even though I didn't want to be there, I still did it.
And what do you think kept you out there?
A lot of it was fear. Like I said earlier, a fear of disappointing my mom. And then also, you know, our mission president preached over and over again that if we went home early, then no good LDS woman would want to marry us.
Isn't that crazy?
It was crazy. And so I do see how I was living my life for other people and their approval.
Right.
And it caused me to really disconnect from who I really was. I never even started to explore that until later in life.
Yeah.
Okay. So one other thing that I want to share about talking about my childhood, and I do say this with love, I don't think my parents were really trying to create that in me. They weren't trying to create this disconnect. It's just something that I learned that's what I needed to do to be enough so I could be loved.
Right, of course. Yeah, and that's how I feel about my story too. It's like sometimes you tell the story back, you think, you know, you don't want your parents to feel bad listening to it or whatever, but it's really just what our nervous systems did for what we thought we needed to do to be loved and accepted, right? So thank you for sharing that. And then we were going to get into after your mission and what happened to after that. But I also wanted to share some of my origin story because I haven't fully here on the podcast yet. I'm not going to get too deep into it either, but very similar upbringing in the Mormon church. You know, they call it something, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints now. But I had a really happy childhood, youngest of six kids. And my parents are still together today. And they were loving. And I was the youngest. And so I just remember witnessing a lot of things growing up, watching my older siblings, watching the things that they chose to do, but just mostly just wanting to be obedient and be loved and accepted and worthy, right? And there's so much story we could,
I know,
get into, but that's not what this podcast or this episode is about today. It's more just like, you know, I kind of was the one that checked all the boxes, and you know, I don't really know that there's anything else I really need to share about my origin story.
Yeah. Why do you feel like you had to check all those boxes?
Well, so that I could be accepted and know that I was a good girl and loved. And I kind of saw my older siblings do things that maybe weren't like perfect, or, you know, now it's like just normal teenage things. But in like the religion we grew up in, it's like, you're not supposed to drink, you're not supposed to smoke, you're not supposed to do anything sexually with anyone. And so, and then if I saw one of my older siblings do that, and then my parents be disappointed in them or them get in trouble, I didn't want to disappoint my parents. And I would, or I'd see them be sad. And then, and I also see my siblings be sad because they were getting in trouble, or, right. And I just have a few memories of that. And I was just thinking like, oh, I don't ever want to make my parents sad. So I'm going to be perfect. And not that I was perfect, right? We're never perfect, but like I was going to be the perfect Mormon. I was going to try my hardest to be, you know, to follow all the rules. Damn it. So I did. And I was a really like high achiever as well, because that made me feel like I was worthy. Mm-hmm. And so I had like this big goal to get into BYU and be a BYU cheerleader. And I took college classes in high school and took the ACT 5 times because I needed to up my score so that I could get in, and that everyone would be proud of me, you know? So that's kind of, and I did end up doing that. It took an extra year to actually, and that's a whole nother story, but I did. I had a really fun high school experience, and I sent a few missionaries out to the field. And I was like, the virgin, just keeping myself so morally clean for marriage. And
how did you feel as a female in the church about guys who would have come home from their mission?
So when you say that, it's like, yeah, I was absolutely like taking nothing less than the return missionary. And it makes me physically like have a reaction to even say that, because I have so much compassion for men, like boys in the church who don't want to go on a mission, or if they say they do come home early, you're like judged so harshly,
and now you're less than, and you're not worthy,
right? But we literally were taught that in our young women's classes, like, you need to marry a return missionary, that's what you're striving for, otherwise you're not going to have a good marriage, or, you know. And I know things have kind of evolved since then, but even still, like, we were just talking to Brian, my daughter, about missionaries, and I don't know if you were in on that conversation, but just recently when she came home, there she was talking about a few of her friends, and I was like, is it still like that? Like people are still judged. She goes, oh yeah, people are totally judged, and it's so sad.
Yeah.
So that I don't love that pressure. Like, even when you were talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, so much pressure.
It was a lot of pressure. And at that time I didn't know anything different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking back, I can see how much pressure it was. But when you're in survival, you're just operating and you don't know anything different. And that's why, like,
right. You don't know anything different.
Right.
And so you just keep going.
You just keep going. Yeah.
And you're also like being told how to live your life, like what to do.
Exactly.
This is what you do. And so, yeah. So when I got into BYU and I got a cheer, and it was like a dream come true for me. But partway through my first season cheering, I got engaged.
Mm.
And, you know, like, because that's also what you do, right?
Get married younger.
Get married now. I was 19.
Oh, wow.
You know, engaged it at 18. All right, now we're going to bring it back to Randy. So we left off with you serving a mission for the full time in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So what happened when you came home?
When I came home, I launched into school. I moved away from Snuffley, moved down here to Mesa, and I started going to school because I really wanted to become a physical therapist.
Yeah. Why did you want to become a physical therapist?
It was one of those things, a lot of sports injuries. Like I said, I kind of excelled at everything. Football was kind of my number one sport. And my senior year, I broke my leg really bad. Needed it 5 surgeries to kind of repair it with metal plates and screws and pins in my toes. And I had to do PT for about a year. And
let's just slow this down for a second.
Okay.
Because this was a very traumatic injury for you.
It was.
Randy had multiple letters from colleges scouting you, mm-hmm. or offers, right?
Yeah, they were coming my senior year to, mm-hmm. for scout.
You're, you know, a top athlete on the team. You're being scouted. You have the letters.
I do, yeah.
And early on in your senior year season, football season?
Yep.
So
second
walk us through what happened.
Second night in pads, my senior year. It was just a play where one of the guards sat in the pool and one guy latched onto my ankle. The other guy did an alligator roll and it just twisted my ankle back and broke it. But the point is it was a very devastating blow because it changed the trajectory of my life. You know, I grew up doing construction with my dad and being in a small town. I didn't really see another way out of that. It's not what I wanted to do. So in hindsight, that injury kind of launched me into a career where I got to help people, mm-hmm. which is one of the patterns that I learned as a child to be accepted. I didn't just learn how to be an achiever and overachieve for everything. I learned also how to be the nice guy and the helper. And putting everybody first and doing everything for everybody. Never thought of myself, you know, and it was just the way that I learned how to survive, to be accepted and to be loved by those close to me. Right. And I was afraid if I didn't do that, then people would be upset at me or be disappointed in me. So my two big survival patterns were I learned to achieve and I learned how to be a helper, which ironically is one of the main reasons why I became a physical therapist.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think you would have become a physical therapist if you hadn't had that accident your senior year?
No, I don't think that I would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that accident took you out, right? You tried to play. So you went to physical therapy and it helped you so much, helped you get back on the field.
Yeah, it helped me get back on the field, but never at 100%.
And it would be several months, right, before you. It would be the next season.
It would be the next season, yeah. I ended up having to be a fifth-year senior because all those surgeries, it took me out the entire first semester of my senior year.
This is like the saddest.
So I was literally on painkillers in bed the whole first semester. So I finally got back to school in January. And come graduation time with my whole class, I had to just sit on the sidelines and watch my whole class, the kids that I grew up with my whole life.
Gut wrenching.
All graduate. And then I had to work with my dad that summer in construction and then go back to school for that next year. For one semester. And then as soon as I finished, then I left on my mission. So I missed my high school graduation.
Right. That's why I wanted to slow the story down because this changed a lot of the trajectory of your life. And it had to be so extremely difficult to go from college offers to being in bed, missing your senior year graduation, and then having to go back. Have you healed from this experience?
Yes and no.
Come back to that
version. I've definitely gone back to that version. And at that time, there was a lot of embarrassment having to go back as a fifth year senior, mm-hmm. you know, it had nothing to do with my grades.
Right.
But I was worried that people would think that it was.
So yes and no, you still have some healing work around this.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. So then you came back, you dove into school and you knew that you wanted to be a physical therapist.
Yes. So I knew I wanted to go into business and I knew that I also wanted to be a physical therapist. PT that I went to, he owned his own clinic, you know, a couple of them, and I kind of liked that. I've always loved business. In school, I loved math and science, loved problem solving, just the way that my brain works. And so I did, same thing. I felt behind in school because of the mission, and I hadn't done any college. And I did what I always do. I overexcelled, and I did my bachelor's degree in just barely over 3 years so I could apply to grad school. I got right into grad school for my doctorate degree in physical therapy in Chicago. And at that time, I had about a year left of my undergrad by the time I got married. And then we got pregnant and had our first son 4 weeks before we had to move to Chicago. And so we moved to Chicago and I did grad school. And was there for 3 years. And then, you know, I came back and worked as a physical therapist. And same thing, I kind of launched into my patterns. I outworked everybody. I overachieved. I became one of the youngest PTs at that time in that company to become a partner in the clinic that I was overseeing.
Wow. So how old were you at that time?
At that time, I was 31.
A new dad.
As a new dad and working two jobs, trying to pay for, you know, at that time we had to go through IVF to have our second and third kid as well.
Which is a lot to go through.
Yeah, that was a lot as well. But I think ultimately, like, getting married kind of young, you know, someone who was in the church, I look back now and I see that I was still operating from the same patterns that I was in childhood. Get a good job, work hard, be a good provider, be enough.
Right, which are all good things to want to be.
Absolutely.
It was rooted in you wanting to feel like you were enough, that you were loved, right?
Yeah.
Accepted.
Yeah. You know, and that's kind of where I look at what I built. Because even after that partnership that I had, I started my own company finally back in 2018. And I built one clinic into seven clinics within the first 4 years.
Which is amazing.
It was a huge accomplishment. And I'm really proud of myself. But that's the part where I still felt like it wasn't enough.
Why did you feel like that?
I could just tell inside that I was performing. Mm-hmm. That's when I kind of started to see it, you know, like on paper, everything looked like it needed to look. But I still felt like what I was doing wasn't enough. I was operating from fear.
Yeah. I just love you. Right. So we're continuing with the stories. So, like I said, I got married when I was 19 to the return missionary in the temple. And I felt really young, but I was really happy. Like, I felt like, oh, here I am. This is what we do. We ended up moving back to Arizona. I didn't really want to because I wanted to finish my degree, which I was like working hard towards. And that was a big goal of mine. And so looking back now, I'm like, oh, I totally abandoned myself right then, which I had, you know, obviously done that, learned that pattern early on in my life. But that was a thing that was hard for me for a while, was like not finishing my degree. I came back down to Arizona and tried to transfer and I was going to lose credits. So I jumped right into personal training. My degree was supposed to be in exercise science. So I did that and I got my real estate license and I was this little hustler, you know?
Yeah.
And so since I was married so young, we wanted to wait like a while to have kids. And so we didn't start trying to have kids for like 3 years. And so I was building my business. I was loving it. But then I kind of felt that pressure. Like people would ask, like, when are you going to have kids? You know, and here I am, like 22. And so that kind of started having kids. And then the longer story with that is, you know, you had your IVF stuff that you had to go through. And I went through several miscarriages, 6 miscarriages. And it was really a brutal, really difficult time, which I'm sure you can relate to.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of that. So, but fast forward through all of that suffering, which honestly, at the time, I felt like I had not a perfect life, but I hadn't had really, I felt like a lot of struggles. And so I was like, well, this is my struggle. And it was brutal. Like it was really, really challenging. Because once I did get pregnant, it was bed rest. It was high risk pregnancies. You wouldn't really know it now looking at my 4 kids that are all pretty close together, but it was like hard to get every single one of them here. And I'm grateful for that because it changed me so much, just like anything does that we struggle through. And so, yeah, after I had my 2nd baby, I stopped working and I was stay-at-home mom for the rest of the time, which I loved. It was, but that, it's also what you were kind of recommended to do. And so, but I loved it and having kids. So like when my oldest was 6, I had 6-year-old, 4-year-old, 2-year-old newborn.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot. It was a lot, but it was also, it was kind of a blur, but those were beautiful years that I'm grateful that I got to stay home with my kids. And we were kind of, I feel like I was in that box of Mormonism.
Yeah.
Almost like a robot of living my life, how I was told to live and taught to live and doing what I felt like other people wanted me to do. And it was kind of easy to operate that way until it wasn't anymore. So when I say till it wasn't, it was in 2015 when I kind of started to, and I talk about this in the podcast in earlier episodes, so you can go back and listen, but it just talks about how I was feeling spiritually dead. I was struggling with anxiety. I was having a lot of doubts about the faith that I was in. And I just needed help, right? And so that's when I got into listening to podcasts and learning about all the things. But it would take 4 years before I would leave my religion. And for me, it was a slow burn process of like, no one knew that this was what was happening except for my husband at the time. And with him, I didn't share like my angst about it for a few years. It's like he was in a high calling in the church. I thought that something was going wrong with me. It was like this panic feeling. So then finally when I brought it to him, he was super compassionate and let me look into some of this stuff. And then it would take him over a year of like study, figuring out. And then we left together, which was a more, it was like you felt like you had to announce it almost.
I get that. Yeah.
Do you feel like that? So I want to hear like your timeline with that too, because we both grew up in the same religion. But to complete that, in 2019 was when we stepped away. And it was after that, like slowly things kind of began to unravel and burn to the ground, because when you're living in a way that you're taught to conform to, and then you don't have that anymore, then you become who you're really meant to be without being put in that box. Right. And so then it's like, it's such a mind, you know, I haven't said F word on the podcast yet. I love that for, it's like taking a lid off of a boiling pot of water, like, there's so much that goes to it. And what I really do want to say too, because obviously if you've been following my story or not, or just recently on the podcast, you know that I went through a divorce. And I have people ask me, and especially at the beginning of, or like back when I was decided to go to file for divorce, was do you wish you hadn't left the church? And I love that question. And I love being able to say with confidence and like just love for myself that I would leave the church every single time for me personally.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't authentic and true for me. And so, yeah, as a result of that, like becoming who we were both very different and wanted different things, because that was the true nature of who we were. And we weren't compatible. So anyway, so that's kind of what happened. And ultimately, like making a long story very short, was choosing to divorce in 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was that authenticity piece of it. For me, it was very similar. I could feel the anxiety building, the pressures that I had been living in my whole life of performing and being everything that everybody needed me to be. And it was to the point where I started drinking alcohol in secret from time to time, just to kind of ease that anxiety. And at that time,
like secret from everybody.
Yeah. I mean, my wife at the time would drink with me a little bit as well, but then we would still go to church, and that felt like I was living two lives. You know, it was one of those things where I was already kind of questioning the church my whole life. And so same thing. It was probably around 2015 when I started going to church less and less. And I think by 2018, when I kind of started the business, I wasn't going anymore.
And did you kind of hide that from family, from others?
I definitely hid it from not my parents as much, but from my in-laws at that time. You know, they were a little bit more ingrained in the church. Mm-hmm. My parents, I felt like, were a little bit more understanding. But it was to the point where it started creating tension in the marriage. Like, if I didn't go to church, you know, there was that perception of like everybody else, like, are you okay? What's wrong? Like, why are you not coming to church?
The judgment from the whole others was insane.
And I had kind of let go of that, but that was really still really important to her, that extra perception of showing up and putting on that face to be what everybody else wanted us to be. And so I just kind of was getting tired of it. And so I started resisting more and more, to the point where, you know, I just kind of stopped going.
And how did that feel to you? Did you feel more free? Did you feel like, oh, I'm not as good of a person because I'm not going?
Yeah, this is when I really started struggling with who am I as a person? I've been operating under the same patterns for so long. And I didn't really know who I was without those patterns and who I was without the church. So there was a little bit of freedom and relief from it, more so from just the freedom of the obligation of going and trying to put that down. But then I was also left with still trying to figure out who I am, what do I believe, and what, right, what and, does matter.
And maybe the guilt.
And there was definitely the guilt.
Right, which is, it's so wild. Like when you talk to people who haven't been in a high demand religion, and they're like, you had to hide your drinking.
Yeah, the shame that
as a grown ass adult. You know, or even like,
yeah,
I don't know why this is coming up, but like going to the grocery store on Sunday. So like, we made a joke about that the other day, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we saw a man and his son, and they looked like
they were in church. Yeah.
Like a Mormon church, and they're coming out of the grocery store, and we just kind of made comment about, oh my gosh, they're at the store on Sunday, which we weren't.
We weren't judging, but we know what that
feels like. But we know what that feels like. Yeah. But you had to like run to the store to get something.
And to hide it.
Right.
Right. And I think that's
like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to carry, and it's a lot.
The expectations that.
And just constantly performing and being someone that you're really not. There's not freedom in that.
Right. Well, for us. I mean, for some people. And I always like to make that clear too. It's like, it's not about the religion.
No.
You know, if that religion feels good to you and to your soul and that's what you want, like, I love that. I'm never going to bash or judge anyone for their religion. But we're sharing our own real experiences. And it's like, of course, are aligned.
Yes. And this is definitely my experience that I am speaking to, nobody else's. And this is what was true for me. You know, and it might be different for somebody else. And I support everybody's decision. That's where the freedom really is.
Yeah.
It's just accepting people for how they want to live their life. And that's all I really wanted for myself.
So how do you feel like stepping away impacted your relationship?
I think it put a strain on us. I think both of us were kind of questioning who we were.
Right. Oh, because you said going was not authentic for you. So like feeling like you had to go to put on the show or so that you could be seen as good people, like that wasn't feeling good.
It wasn't feeling good to me anymore. And so I was letting that go. You know, I definitely think it did put a strain on us, and it kind of left us both kind of questioning who we were as people.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What it was like for you to choose to divorce, and like what led you to that decision, and then maybe what it was like right after that.
Yeah, that's a big one. And that was obviously one of the hardest moments that I've ever been through.
Yeah.
You know, for me, once I found out that trust had been broken in my marriage, it was one of those moments where I kind of thought that, you know, I would leave and just be good with it. And, you know, I found myself actually staying and trying to make it work. And I told myself it was for the kids at that time, and partly it was. But really what I did at that time was I launched into all of these same survival patterns that I've learned and lived in my entire life.
Right. Which at the time you didn't know you were
in survival. I didn't know I was in survival. That's the whole point, you know? And so I launched into giving more, spending more money, taking everybody on more vacations, trying to really prove my worth through external sources, just trying to be enough. And I just launched deeper into it. And during that time is when I really started to feel the self-abandonment that I was doing and that I had been living my whole life.
And I'd love to slow that down for a second, because self-abandonment, at the time, that's what you were doing, but you didn't know you were doing
it. I had no clue.
So now that you've gone through it all, you realize what it was. But like at the time,
it was... Oh, yeah. I had no idea what I was doing at the time. I just was operating from the patterns of survival that I had learned my whole life.
Right.
Be a good helper. Do more, work harder, provide more. And like you said earlier, those are things that I love doing naturally anyway, but I wasn't doing them for the right reasons. And that's, you know,
like the key.
That is the key. And even helping and doing all those other things, like I was doing it for approval and I was doing it to be loved.
Yeah. Yeah, so you fought, you stayed in it for a while.
I fought and I stayed in it for a while, yeah. And, you know, just losing myself deeper and deeper in the meantime until the point where I think I realized that this is my life. I could feel more intense the pressure that I've lived in my whole life. And it was one of those, it wasn't a loud moment for me. It was actually just kind of a quiet internal like realization of kind of what I was doing and looking into the future and realizing that I didn't feel safe in the relationship and living under that pressure of performance. I was like, I don't want to live the rest of my life like this. Mm-hmm. And so leaving was a really, really hard moment for me because it went against everything that I had done my whole life, which was meaning to, which meant that I had to actually choose me. And that was hard.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, really hard. And, you know, it was messy. It was messy in the beginning. And, but once I left, it actually gave me the space that I needed to actually start seeing everything for what it was. And I realized that, like, in those moments, that something had to change, not within other people, but within me, that I was the co-creator of my life and my circumstance.
Right. No one forced you to overgive and try to prove yourself. And
to never choose me and to just chronically overgive and overachieve, which I do love those parts in me, because now I'm in a place, you know, fast forward, like I still love helping people just by nature. It's who I am.
That's so good.
But now I can do it because when it feels good to me, but now I can also use my voice and say no when I need to, and I can choose me. But to get to that point from leaving, from the time I left, was very difficult, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I do know.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. I think just seeing my story and yours too, it's, I remember being in a long-term marriage and hearing about people getting divorced and like, oh, that's so sad. And then also just not understanding, like, why can't they just get along?
Yeah.
You know, like, I had no idea how traumatic divorce was.
So traumatic.
You can't know.
Yeah, you can't know until you go through it.
Right. Even if you know, and I didn't really know anyone very close to me to help, like, support them through it either. And so, like, by saying that, I mean, the people who know me closely and saw me go through it, they might have a glimpse, right, of what it's like. But if you haven't experienced it, it's like no one wants to be divorced.
Yeah, no one does.
No one wants to share their kids. And I think that's why you kind of do have, not have to, but I think many choose to fight and fight and fight and stay, even when it's, you really shouldn't leave sooner, right? Like, when I think about it, if I would have left sooner, I would have suffered so much less. Then I wouldn't have learned all the things that I learned. I wouldn't have known, like, I literally did everything and beyond to try to make it work. And so, yeah, I mean, I think finally, because that's the thing too, is like, by the time someone chooses to divorce, that means they've been through years of suffering or fighting, or typically, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know anyone who's just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get divorced. It's brutal. And so you've already been through a lot of fight or flight survival struggles, therapy, maybe separation on and off. That was what it was like for me for a year. And then, so actually finally making that choice to move on, I think truly that was when I started my healing journey. I couldn't start it before that.
Yeah.
And then the first 6 months after filing were probably the most brutal of my life. Like,
same.
Dark nights of the soul, like the grief. And I chose to feel it all without any like buffers. I just made a commitment, like, so buffering is like a coaching term for, you know what that is, right?
Yeah.
So it's anything you do to not feel the pain. Right. So drinking, shopping, taking a Xanax, numbing out, which I don't judge anyone for doing those things. Sometimes you got to do those things to survive, but I'm just like, I'm just going to feel this all. And I also made a commitment that I wasn't going to date anyone for at least 6 months. And so and what's hard about that is when the person you left was never alone. And so you feel like now all of a sudden I have like my first Christmas without the kids, which was gut-wrenching.
Oh, the holidays were the worst.
And everyone warned me. They were like, the holidays are going to be bad. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to choose to believe that I can have my Christmas with them, not on Christmas, and I'll be fine and it's not going to be that bad. And I had no idea how bad it would actually be.
Yeah.
So yeah, how was the first 6 months for you?
It was very brutal. And I definitely was using buffers for a little while. But at the same time, I had launched into therapy and I found a personal coach to kind of help me work through what I was feeling. And in the beginning, I really did what I've always done. I launched into the healing process and I wanted to be the best at it. And I wanted to do it so good and I wanted to get it perfect.
I was the same. Yeah.
Right. So my patterns followed you. And that's kind of looking back, like my childhood, my marriage, my career, they're actually just all the same. All the same patterns and operating the same way in all of those assets or aspects of my life. And so when I left, the pain was just immeasurable. And, you know, kind of talking about those buffers and like you said, no shame. That's also one of the things that I learned was to have compassion for myself. Because when I started to heal, I would look back on that version and kind of be upset with that version of myself. And I realized I was holding that past version of myself to the standard of where I was at today, because I knew a lot more today and I understood myself a lot more today. And I was starting to hold myself at a standard of that past version. And so I learned, instead of beating myself up, to have compassion and understanding. And that's why I started looking back into the inner child work and understanding these patterns and everything that you have talked about on this podcast so beautifully, about self-abandonment, about inner child work, about understanding triggers. So the healing process for me was a very painful but beautiful thing. And so when I stopped using those buffers is when I realized that space started to open up and I started to sit with the pain like you mentioned. And that's when I started realizing the level of self-abandonment. And I realized that I was using those buffers and operating from survival because I didn't want to actually look at that. And that was the pain that I think was probably the greatest. And on the other side of that, though, has been so liberating.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
About which part?
About like how you were able to access the pain through healing and actually feel it.
So for me, it was step by step. And like I said, like it was messy in the beginning. And then once I started to actually feel the pain and looking and understanding my patterns and seeing the self-abandonment and me just kind of launching into giving more and improving myself more, I had to actually sit and grieve that version of me. Mm-hmm. I had to grieve that pain. And I remember when I was first going into the healing stuff and people were talking about like, oh, kind of ego deaths and things like that. And, oh, you got to let go of that old version of yourself. And for me, like, that was really hard to do because I thought, like, I knew that version of who I was. And letting go of him and stepping into this new version of me is what kind of people, like, talked about, like, this new version of me, right? I didn't know that version of me. And so it was really hard to let go of those patterns. That's kind of why it was messy in the beginning. And that's why I can have some compassion for myself. And what I realized is, for me, it was just letting go of those survival patterns. It wasn't letting go of who I am as a person. In fact, it actually brought me into who I have always been. I'm still a hopeful, very loving individual. I still love setting goals and achieving things. And so once I actually sat and I grieved that, it actually allowed me to kind of let go of some of the fear and kind of step into this pattern, which it takes time to build that self-trust into who I am. It was getting to know myself. And so I had to practice using my voice, saying no when I really wanted to say yes because I was afraid. Speaking my needs, you know, for fear of it upsetting somebody or disappointing somebody or being too much.
Mm-hmm. Right. Not giving in to what other people wanted you to do.
Yeah. And so every time that I practice that, I notice something that I developed a deeper self-trust in myself, which then all of a sudden I felt the effects of that, which was I felt more of my internal confidence. I felt more freedom.
Mm-hmm. And because you're no longer doing all those things to be loved or feel like you're enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt more safe in my own body.
Yeah. What was it like doing inner child work for the first time?
Honestly, I thought it was really weird.
Yeah.
I definitely judged it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But when I did it, wow, was it powerful. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly, incredibly powerful. And I'm a believer in inner child work for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't really understand what it is. But...
No, and I didn't understand it either in the beginning. I was like, inner child work, what do you mean? Like, past is past. Like, You know? And so then when my coach at the time kind of, she called it a regression, but kind of took me back to a hard moment in my childhood to kind of help me recognize where these patterns began, and sitting with that version of me and kind of reparenting him and giving him what he needed in that moment. I remember I almost felt like I was on drugs afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I went to my friend's house afterwards, and I talked to him about it and stuff. And then I remember just feeling so light and free. And I remember, like, just out of the blue, I went and I just jumped in his pool. I feel like that inner child wanting to play and be free, you know? And it was actually fun. And he would kind of notice that. He pointed it out. I was just like, oh.
Yeah, so healing.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. And we want to share maybe on a future episode how we love each other's inner child.
Oh, absolutely.
And how we bring our inner children with us.
All the time.
So, yeah, that's for another time. Well, how do you feel sharing this?
Well, it's incredibly vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my things. I've always been afraid to be vulnerable in public like this. Mm-hmm. It took me time to just be able to be vulnerable with just somebody I trust, mm-hmm. you know. But I feel good, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, feels good.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing all of that. I know that was vulnerable. So going back to this, what it was like to be single parents. And really, I think the scariest part is not knowing what the future holds.
Yeah.
And you've lived for years and years and years thinking your life was going to look a different way. And then now it looks completely different. Right. Splitting your kids, trying to heal. For me, I was growing my business, putting so much pressure on myself to perform and achieve. And then also, like, the kids, I mean, they're going through the biggest life change. And I don't want to get into, like, the details of, like, how it was, but, like, it was very high conflict for my family going through that, and just lots of chaos for a while. But, like, I always felt like, okay, I'm going to be grounded, and they're going to be in my home, and there's not going to be, like, I didn't introduce them to anyone. I didn't date for a long time. And then I tell the funny story of, like, after 6 months, I was like, okay, I'm going to start dating. And so I got a dating app, and I met this guy, and I realized he had a lot of the traits of my last relationship. But it was so cool because I had been alone for so long. Like, I didn't need external validation. I didn't need to be in a relationship unless it was going to feel safe and kind of what I wanted. And so I was like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. And then I took another 6 months before. And then again, and when I dated a little bit again, I realized I'm still not ready because I was attracting still some parts, which that is was mine to heal. And it was empowering, but it was also super lonely, you know?
Yeah.
But I wasn't gonna settle, you know. Well, how is parenting for you?
Well, like you said, honestly, that was one of the things that I had to learn how to grieve is the loss of all the future holidays, the loss of all the future family vacations that you kind of plan in your head.
Birthdays with like
family vacation.
Single were so really hard for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like grieving a death because it's.
It is. It's a death. But
yeah.
We're still alive.
Yes. And obviously. It changed how I started showing up as a parent. I felt
very different for you because you weren't in the home with your kids. Like you were working.
Yes, I was working and I moved out and got a rental. And, you know, so then when I did have my kids, I found myself trying to rescue them. And I started giving them everything that they wanted. I never told them no. And if they had an emotional reaction, I would blame myself because of the situation. And so it was tough. It was tough seeing my kids go through something hard.
Which has nothing to do with them, which isn't their fault.
It's absolutely not their fault, you know. And so I did. I wanted to fix it, and which was one of my own patterns. Just I could fix it. I can make it better. I'll take it on. Mm-hmm. And so I was launching into my same patterns with my own kids. And I wasn't showing up as the dad that I knew I wanted to be or the dad that I knew that I was, which was to teach them independence. You know, if they faced anything hard, I gave them so much support, I would just do it for them. And I was missing that critical component of being a dad is to teach them how to do those things and to teach them how to be independent. And luckily I saw it, and it was just for a time, and I of course corrected since then. And
pay the price at first, because that's what they were used to.
Because they definitely get used to it. And then it's when you start to change, they're kind of like, wait, what? What do you mean? You're not going to do it for me. And I think they're getting used to it now for sure. But yeah, so, you know, being a single dad was very difficult.
Yeah. Did you feel like, I felt like I didn't know who I was without being my marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
Who was I as an individual?
Mm-hmm.
And because I had abandoned myself and kind of just did what he wanted to do, once I had that freedom of like, I get to do what I want to do, I was like, what's fun for me?
What do I want to do?
Right.
I had the same thing. Yeah. And that's partly why I stayed for so long too, try to make it work, was because I didn't know who I was outside of the relationship.
Right. So that's a whole other like layer of
yeah.
You're now on your own, you're a single parent, you're managing you're starting a new life, but you still have your kids, and then you're figuring out who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. So I feel like it was the most beautiful gift for me to learn how to love myself and really know who I was.
Absolutely.
Because leaving, I was like, it at times felt selfish.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And that was just a story.
It was. And that's what I said, like going back to what I said earlier, was it went against everything that I had known my entire life, which leaving meant that I had to choose me for once. That was uncomfortable. Because it felt selfish. You're right. You're absolutely right.
It did. And then, but then there's also the part of what I was showing my kids by staying.
Yeah.
And that was one of like the big things for me. It was like, would I want any of my kids to be going through what I'm going through, to be treated this way? And I was like, no. So why am I still here? Because I was scared.
Yes.
You know?
Scared is an understatement. The fear is unbelievable.
I think that's why, like, even today, we see people who, you know, are staying and they're self-abandoning and they... But I have so much compassion for them because I know how terrifying it is.
Well, I have so much compassion and understanding for it. You know, last thing that I'll ever do is judge somebody for where they're at, you know.
Okay, so, and I think this is a good place to close out this episode.
Yeah.
Right? And then the next one will be...
Story of When We Met.
How We Met. Finding Love Later in Life.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here as my first guest.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see everybody in the next episode.